You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Happy Easter, all. This year we're hearing from Matthew and his particular version of the Easter story, an account that, like the other Gospels, tells the story in his own way. First off, you want to keep in mind that Matthew is working off of Mark's super brief version of the story. And where Mark ends with the women running away, scared, and not saying anything, Matthew has Jesus appear to the women and give them very specific instructions of what to do. First instruction, pretty typical of Jesus, don't be afraid. The next instruction, I guess Jesus wanted to reinforce what the angel had already told them, was get thee to Galilee. Let's give a listen to Denise and Didi as they read to us from Matthew.
After the Sabbath and toward dawn on the first day of the week, Mary of Magdala and the other Mary went to visit the sepulcher. And all at once there was a violent earthquake, for the angel of God, descending from heaven, came and rolled away the stone and sat on it. The angel's face was like lightning, and the angel's robe was white as snow. The guards were so shaken, so frightened, that they were as if dead. But the angel spoke and said to the women,
"There is no need for you to be afraid. I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been raised, as he foretold. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell the disciples, 'Jesus has been raised from the dead and now is going before you to Galilee. It is there you will see him. Now I have told you.'"
Filled with awe and great joy, the women came quickly away from the tomb and ran to tell the disciples. And there, coming to meet them, was Jesus.
"Greetings," Jesus said.
And the women came up and, falling down before Jesus, clasped his feet. Then Jesus said to them,
"Do not be afraid. Go and tell the disciples that they must leave for Galilee. They will see me there."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Let me suggest that many people come to the celebration of Easter somewhere on a continuum. On one end are the people who believe all the stories of Jesus rising from the dead are literally true, and are convinced that if you don't believe that to be so, you are no Christian. On the other end are people who, because of their commitment to critical thinking and rational thought, kind of squirm through Easter's claims, but don't dare say they don't believe in the literal physical resurrection because they don't want to be accused of not being a Christian. Most of these people have one thing in common. They don't actually read the Bible. If they did, the literalist group would be scandalized, and the critical thinkers would hardly be able to contain their glee at all the inconsistencies in the text. Mark has three visitors to the tomb. Matthew has two. John has only one. In Mark and Luke and John, a large stone has already been rolled away. In Matthew, an earthquake rolls it away in the presence of those there. Luke does Easter as a meal at a rest stop with the risen Christ. John has the resurrected Jesus encounter Mary Magdalene alone in the garden. And Matthew, wow. I don't know if there are any Walking Dead enthusiasts here, but you'd think the zombie fans would be all over this. Right before today's passage, Matthew has the tombs open and dead people walking in the streets of the city of Jerusalem. But that's not one of the aspects of Easter that you're going to hear preached on very often. So, what the heck is going on? More fuss has been made over the idea of Jesus' resurrection than probably any other event in Western history, and yet, at the same time, it's one of the least understood. Like the birth narratives, you'll see that there are different versions of the events that first Easter. Who saw what first? The number of angels at the tomb? Jesus' appearance? All of them vary from gospel to gospel. And counting Paul, there are really 5 explicit accounts of Easter, none written by anyone who was actually there. Paul's is the earliest account and is really just a part of a creed that he was taught and not written down until 20 years after the event. The next account comes from Mark 20 years after that. Matthew is written in the 80s. The Gospel of John most likely comes from the 90s or later. And the minority but growing consensus is that Luke may have even been written in the early 2nd century. So who knows? Going back to our continuum of literalists on one end and skeptics on the other, let me suggest that much of the grief comes from people not being honest about what's right in front of them. So I encourage you to not be intimidated, literalist or skeptic, to take some time to read all the gospel versions of the Easter story and soak up the richness of their differences. Don't read them trying to defend or condemn their historicity. Read them like you would poetry. And if you're not into poetry, don't be afraid to ask the same questions of the text that you'd ask when you're reading any good book. And hopefully, in the process, you'll start to get a feel for what each of the gospel writers was up to. Because what it finally comes down to is that each of the gospel writers was doing their level best to illustrate something that could only be described poetically. And if you try to read a poem either literally or come to it skeptical of its historicity, you're going to miss the point. So let me make a suggestion for you that especially this Easter resonates in a new way with me. One of the major discrepancies between the Gospels is that Luke's Jesus insists that the disciples must not return to Galilee but stay in Jerusalem. After all, Luke has the ascension coming up on the calendar for the first part of Acts, and the disciples don't want to miss out on that. So, just kind of set Luke over here and just let that be what it is. Then look at Mark, Matthew, and John. They all have Jesus meeting his followers back in Galilee. I love this element of the story because it basically has Jesus say to the disciples, "Go home, I'll meet you there, with the people you know and in familiar surroundings. Then we'll talk about going from there." Isn't that perfect for right now? Where have we all been relegated to? To our homes, right where Jesus sent the disciples. And I like to think of it as a Jesus where you live kind of ethic, especially when seeing Jesus in those with whom we live and encounter day to day, often being the biggest challenges in our lives. Can we see Jesus in them? If so, maybe somewhere down the road, we can work our way up to loving our enemies. Take heart if you miss this idea, though. The lunkheads we call the disciples, they missed it too. What are they doing? They're dejected, they're depressed, they're cowering at home. While a new way of life, a new way of being, was about to be revealed. What the disciples learned, at least in Mark, Matthew, and John, is that whatever effect Easter has on the world, it starts at home. And then it moves out from there, insofar as we're able to practice reconciliation, transform relationships, and foster new life. That's the gift we have as followers of Jesus, to show a hurting world what it means to not be overcome by trials, tribulations, but to strive to face the troubles of the world with a determination to put love first. Author L.R. Nost didn't write this about Easter, but I think she's said what we all need to hear today. Do not be dismayed by the brokenness of the world. All things break, and all things can be mended, not with time, as they say, but with intention. So go, love intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally. The broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you. The whole point of Easter is not about some whiz-bang supernatural event that happened thousands of years ago that causes us to say, wow, so that then we can then just get along with our own business. It's about inspiring us to a new way of being today, of interpreting things today, about a way of making sense of the world, starting in the places that are closest and most familiar, at home. We can never know exactly what happened on that first Easter, but with poet Bruce Sangwin, we can live our everyday lives with the conviction that the Spirit is always rising up in willing hearts and souls, unafraid to hope and to be hope for a world entranced by despair. To close, I'd like to share a song that has moved me in this difficult time in our lives together. It's by singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer. And if you don't already know her music, you might know of her through her collaboration with the always wise and inspiring Parker Palmer. This is from an album from a few years ago, but in the middle of this new reality for all of us, it takes on a new kind of energy. And listening to it, I remember so many of the inspiring and grace-filled moments that I've had the privilege of sharing with so many of you. And it reminds me of how fortunate we are to have one another in our lives.
Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on. Carry on. This one knocked me to the ground. This one dropped me to my knees. I should have seen it coming, but it surprised me. Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on, carry on. In a state of true believers, on streets called us and them, it's gonna take some time till the world feels safe again. Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on, carry on. Here in Brown Chapel, or with a circle of friends, a quiet grove of trees, or between two bookends, Will you be my refuge? My haven in the storm. Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on, carry on, carry on, carry on.
Thank you for being who you are. I am grateful and inspired by the way you've adapted to this new reality and found ever more creative ways to continue to be there not only for one another, but for our neighbors. So even at home, keep doing what you're doing. Put love first, intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally, because the broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you. Christos Aneste, and be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.